You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 294. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight, the new classic crew out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel, staff reviewer, editor, all-around Punk News doer of things.
Yo. It feels like it's been a long time since I've been on, but glad to be here.
It's all blur. I don't know what's even going on.
I would just like to publicly say happy birthday, Adam White.
Yeah, it's my birthday. I'm gonna use this opportunity to be super obnoxious on tonight's show for some reason. And also joining me on tonight, mainly because I'm old and now this is my only, this is one of my few outlets to act like a complete child. Is this and secret projects that John makes me do. Speaking of which, John. Hey, John.
Happy birthday, Adam White. Happy birthday to you. I was doing happy birthday, Mr. President, but happy birthday, Adam White.
Yeah, I fat figured. This is John Gentile out of Philadelphia, who is joining me also on tonight's show. Guys, what are we going to do? A bunch of stuff happened this week. Some of it cool. Some of it's still cool, but involves bodily harm. Some of it involves drugs, some of it involves pop. Those are all things that we like. Ricky, do you want to play a song before we get going?
Yeah, so we premiered this song, I think last week, but anyway, on Punk News, but anyway, Morning Glory's Post-War Psalms came out, I think technically it comes out on April 1st, but also like the MP3s came out on March 22nd, I think. It's phenomenal. It is such a great, great follow-up to their full-length War Psalms. And they put it out on their own label called Buyback Records and through Ryan Young's Anxious and Angry. Really, if you love whatever Ezra does, like me, you will be absolutely thrilled with this EP. So I'm going to play... So this is a song called Clean the World by Morning Glory off Post-War Psalms.
Save
And we are back. Let's jump right into it, boys. Direct hit. They signed with Fat Records. They're going to have a new LP out as early as this summer, which is real quick. Here's what Nick Woods of Direct Hit said about joining Fat Records. Fat Rec defined my opinion of what punk meant and what I was and when I was an insecure teenager in the Midwest. So I guess in a lot of ways, as someone who still cares about music 15 years later, the label has helped define my outlook on life in general. It is incredible for me to be able to say that our band is a small piece of that foundation. Now, Ricky, I know you're a big fan of the band, and actually there's a Morning Glory connection here. Tell me, are you excited for the new record? Are you a Direct Hit fan? Can they live up to the monster punknews.org record that was Brainless God?
Oh, first of all, to me, this is something that should have happened a long time ago. I mean, to me, this Direct Hit is one of the best pop punk bands going out right now. I mean, if they're not the best, they're up there. They're definitely up there, and they're always putting on an amazing show. Brainless God is definitely their achievement. They're probably their top achievement as of right now. But I would also say go and take a look at Dome Splitter, and also the More of the Same singles LP also, or if you can find the singles too, that's even better. Yeah, I mean, I've been following this band since they were on Death to False Hope, before they even put out a full length or that Werewolf Shame EP. The guys are hilarious to talk to too. I've interviewed him. I interviewed Nick before I was on Punk News. I was when I was doing college radio, and he was hysterical. And they're all really nice guys. So yeah, and the thing is, like, if you look and search, and all the podcast nerds can do this, if you search on Punk News, the Direct Hit Live in Pomona show, that is my very first review I ever wrote for Punk News, and it is definitely a very naive Ricky Frankel writing his first review. But I still remember that show very clearly. It was awesome. And I even said at the bottom, I'm like, they're on Red Scare now, but you know what? If they move on to Fat, I basically wouldn't be surprised. So that was 3 years ago. I'm glad that prediction has come true. Nothing but the best for these guys. I mean, now in terms of the Morning Glory connection, my only thing is that they Direct Hit, Morning Glory, and Off of Their Heads did a tour of like the East Coast a few years ago.
Indeed.
So is that the connection you're
talking
about?
That's the connection about? I was
talking about. Boom. What do you guys think about? Are you guys Direct Hit fans?
I liked Brandon Scott a lot. I don't think I've heard other stuff from them. For Brandon Scott, they released that series of a video. What was it? They had like an interconnected like storyline that they made out of videos for that album. Did they not?
Yes, because
was that them? Okay.
Yeah, because it was what's it called? It was sort of a concept album.
Okay. So we're talking about the same band. So yeah, I liked Brandon Scott a lot. I don't think I liked it necessarily as much as the rest of the world seemed to like it. And I remember now that my main issue was that I was not as engaged with the overtly pop punk side of Direct Hit as I was with the kind of more gritty punk rock side of them.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like both were fine. I much prefer the grittier one. And the two didn't seem to gel for me as well as I think it does for other people. But that said, there's an insane amount of potential in figuring out where those two things intersect and meet. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Just real quick, if you want to, I mean, first of all, I would encourage anyone to, if you haven't heard of this band, I would encourage them to kind of figure out where they like it, where they like the grittier or the poppier stuff, like on Dome Splitter. Also, I don't know if, Adam, have you listened to either the Eradicator EP, which the band is on, but it's not under Direct Hit, and then also what's it called? Galactic Cannibal is more of the grittier stuff, but it does involve Nick Woods and some of the other members. I don't know if you've heard of those either.
I don't actually listen to music, Ricky. No, the Eradicator EP is cool, if for no other reason than it's a great Kids in the Hall reference, true. Right? So so the Eradicator thing is good. And that the fact that that whole thing, that an EP and a band themed around this dumb, what was it? Was it a tennis?
I think it was racquetball.
It was racquetball. Yeah, from this goofy old racquetball joke from Kids in the Hall. The fact that they took that and made it into a band shows incredibly good taste and judgment on this band's part. So, I mean, that endears them to me for ages. You want like Canadians of a certain age to be on your side. Go drop Kids in the Hall references, and you basically have got us, you know, in your back pocket. So anyways, that was cool. I think that, like, if anyone hasn't gotten in the Direct Hit and you're going to now go check them out because they're going to start showing up on Fat, like, don't listen to one song, I think is what we're saying. Like, go listen to, like, a handful.
No,
because they switch gears dramatically.
Yeah, I think I was going to say, I think it's going. This is a band I think you should go in order. If you haven't heard them before, go in order of just the full lengths. You do, you know, Dome Splitter, Brainless God, then you'll see the huge jump they make. And why Brainless God is so amazing, but Dome Splitter is too. And then go for the singles album from Red Scare also. But it's all, to me, it's all good. To me, like, this band can do no wrong. So I have a ton of confidence that this next album will be amazing.
You heard it here. Ricky Frankel says it's all good. Yes. So in that accent too. Anyways, so that's cool. Let's talk a little bit about some record sales, Ricky. What's going on?
So as pointed out, I'm gonna just read this out loud. So as pointed out by Pitchfork in 2015, vinyl sales brought in more money than the income received from free online streaming services. Note that this that the figure was based on gross sales as determined by sticker price and not net profit recouped by labels or artists. I think that's probably important. In 2015, vinyl sales rose 32% to $416 million. This was the highest level of vinyl sales since 1988. In fact, you could say it was the record year. By contrast, the revenue generated from on-demand ad-supported streaming grew 31% to $385 million. However, total sound recording sales were estimated at $7 billion. The good news is that music sales actually rose in 2015, growing by a small but noticeable 0.9% from 2014 to 2015. All right. That's a lot. That's a lot of numbers and figures. Adam, I'll throw it to you. What do you think?
Yeah. So this doesn't sound impressive when you read the headline, if only because it says, like, the sale of physical products made more money than the free stuff. So what would want to think that, like, yes, like, of course anything is more than zero, but the what we're talking about here is ad supported free music, and there's a big obvious elephant that is in the room for ad-supported free music that actually makes that sound a little bit more impressive than it is. So, of course, we're talking about this includes any of the streaming services that allow you to listen without having purchased anything. So I'm going to start listing places that are probably out of business given how music startups work these days. So forgive me if I'm wrong here, but is that how, say, something like Pandora, is that still around?
Yeah, Pandora's still around.
Spotify.
I think Spotify, right, Spotify's the big one.
Spotify has, like, an ad-supported version as well, right? So this counts for all of that. But what it also counts for, and this is, to me, the impressive thing, is YouTube. So YouTube at some, and now it doesn't account for all of YouTube's revenue, mind you, but what they're talking about here is that at some point a few years ago, YouTube decided that trying to sue everyone that was throwing music up as a stream, as, you know, one of those horrible, not really a video videos where it's just audio and a record cover, those kind of things. Instead of trying to, like, sue all of those off the face of the earth, that a better idea would just be to, if you are using someone's copyrighted music, basically divert any of the ad revenue that would have been done there off towards the various rights holders and, you know, allow those things to actually start generating revenue as streaming music. Now, I don't know to what degree that split is or anything like that. But if you go and you punch a song into YouTube and expect to find it, and you probably will, and then you go listen to it, that's money that's accrued into this bucket that we're saying that vinyl sold more than. So to me, that is kind of impressive, actually, because I have this gut feeling that if you were really to go out there and survey, like, kids in particular, the majority of them are listening to music on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, as their primary thing. Like, they're going on and they're punching in a band or something that they like, and they're just letting YouTube, like, loop from one video or song to the next. And this is the way that, or and like, not even kids, but, like, I don't know, like, people in offices, say, that have, you know, computers and things like that. Like, I've got to imagine that, like, just, like, having YouTube clips just stream into each other is actually an enormous part of the market. So the fact that vinyl sold more than that, or vinyl, you know, sold more at the register than that is cool. How much does anyone that we really care about get money out of this? I don't know. But
but I mean, if streaming only brought in $385 million and vinyl only brought in $416 million out of the $7 billion, where's that other $6 billion coming from?
iTunes and CD sales. Even though CD sales are in a rapid decline, CD sales still do make up a very significant part of the market. I think it's like 40% right now, particularly on the non-coastal states in the Midwest, in Midwest out in Ohio. That's the country western CDs. Country western still sells way more CDs than it does digital downloads. That trend will change eventually, but that's why. What I think is interesting about this is that this goes to show just how piss poor the online streaming service is as towards artists. You and I mean, listen, I love vinyl records. We're a huge vinyl records fan, but vinyl records right now are a novelty. They will fade away. I mean, there will probably always be vinyl records, at least for the next 20 or 30 years. But 5 years from now, vinyl records will not nearly be as possible as popular as they are now.
Popular.
But even now, I mean, vinyl records do not sell that many. So there are literally billions and billions of streams in America alone for bands. America might sell maybe 1 million vinyl records per year, maybe, you know. So if that 1 million or whatever number it is of vinyl records can outclass the billions and billions and billions of streams, that just goes to show how artists make almost nothing from online streams. That being said, the numbers are kind of deceiving because it's, you know, a record sells for $18. What does the artist actually see from that? I don't know, maybe $1, maybe $2. You know, if you sell it at a show, a lot more. But they're all rules of thumbs, these numbers. They're all, heuristics. But it just goes to show that how fundamentally destructive online streaming is towards artists. And 2 years ago, I would say streaming is evil. I hate streaming, and I do hate streaming to a degree. But it ain't changing, so even though it's completely disrespectful towards an artist's rights and violative of an artist's rights, you can't. I mean, listen, if you're living in an area and it gets hit by tornadoes, you got to move. It's not the nice thing. It's not the right thing, but you got to move. What can you do? You know, so the music industry is changing, and bands are just going to have to learn how to live with it. And a lot of them won't. And we're going to lose a lot of great artists. And we have lost a lot of great artists because of it. But what can you do?
Yeah, it means a lot of those artists, instead of, you know, touring full time, are going to be working in a lumber yard or something.
Yeah, so, and that's also, I mean, also, let's not forget, like, that $7 billion should probably be a lot more because people are still torrenting.
Yeah, but actually, torrenting is way down. This is one benefit of streaming and also of iTunes. Torrenting is way, way, way down due to particularly online streaming, but also iTunes. But streaming has cut torrenting into like 1/3 or something like that.
Here's the actual numbers off of the RIAA's chart thing here. So this year, what it's saying is that this year digital was 70% and physical was
13%. I was close. I said 40%.
Yeah. Now, because last year, if you want to compare it, so like last year physical was 33, so down to 30. Last year was digital was 67, up to 70. you know, there's a handy little bunch of pie charts and things like that that you can go find. That will link them in the show notes for this episode. Isn't it crazy how we're sitting here talking about the RIAA like it's not something that we thought was the evilest thing in the world a few years ago?
Well, I never thought they were the most evilest thing in the world. I think some of their policies were ill-conceived, but the purpose of the RIAA, at least hypothetically, is to defend an artist's rights, which I'm 100% behind. But as with any organization, sometimes, you know, ghouls get in the head and exploit it for their own purposes rather than for the fundamental purpose of the organization. So
I know. I feel that back in the Napster days, like people talked about the RIA, like they talk about like Monsanto today. Yeah. Like at this point, it's just sort of like, yeah, that's the industry, and it doesn't really matter too much. But like, fuck, they were the evil empire a few years ago.
Well, I mean, also, I mean, for the main reason I don't like streaming is, sure, you know, bands don't get paid what they should, but honestly, I like owning things. I don't like renting and having the privilege of being able to get it. I want to and not owning it. I want to be able to just have it. That just makes me feel way more comfortable. It's a comfort thing completely and a preference. And to let that kind of, I don't know if that's like a consumer, I don't want to say it's a consumer right, but something as a consumer, I like to keep an eye on. That's why I do like vinyl. And I think I'm probably stuck doing vinyl forever, I think.
What because Ricky's saying is that it. You couldn't be killed by being crushed under a pile of streams.
That is fair, yes.
That is absolutely true, and don't deny it.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Anyways, I'm just going to walk all over this episode, by the way. I'm going to keep us moving here because we all know everyone doesn't like streaming. And
you like it though, Adam, don't you? You like streaming.
I'm a pragmatist on this. You know, I love owning records. I can't afford to own all the records I, you know, would want to own. So that's, you know, there's still stuff I want to hear. And if I restricted myself strictly to stuff that I was going to physically buy, then I wouldn't hear the stuff that I want to hear. So streaming serves a purpose. Plus, no one wants me bringing 3 milk crates of records to my office every morning. So being able to hop onto iTunes and just listen to stuff, is fine. I'm cool with that. I by no means equate the two as far as quality or experience, but you know, if I need something in my ear while I'm sitting there with headphones on in my office writing code, I can deal with the stream.
You gotta
for that
give
purpose.
iTunes credit in that iTunes is so valuable in tracking down like rare and obscure stuff that you can't even find records of online, you know, so you gotta give YouTube that. Anyway, I'm sorry, Adam, go ahead.
Anyways, yeah. So, oh wait, no. Sorry, Ricky, jump in.
Just real quick. I mean, just to go back to what you just said. When I mean owning, I mean it doesn't necessarily need to be physical. I just want to be able to have the MP3 on my hard drive instead of on some.
You see,
server.
I'm weird because like if there's one thing that streaming's done, and this is really weird for me, it's that streaming has killed that aspect for me, where. It used to be very important to me that like I had this nicely curated, you know, iTunes library that at first it was just all CDs that I had ripped. Mm-hmm. And then it was I was an e-music person. So then it was stuff that I had like physically purchased and downloaded that was on my computer. And then after that, it became, you know, the free downloads you get with vinyl or whatever else. But like I made a point of making sure I had all that. But at this point, it became so much music that it no longer fit on my laptop. So it had to go on an external hard drive, which, of course, becomes a pain in the ass if you're trying to, like, go from place to place to place because you sometimes don't have the hard drive plugged in. So if you open up iTunes, it's too stupid to know what to do. So half the stuff doesn't work half the time. So for me, having the streaming stuff has actually made it so that I care way less about the MP3s. I still like the idea of having them. To the point where like sitting here next to me on my desk, I have a plastic 7-inch vinyl sleeve that is full of nothing but download cards out of records that I have not redeemed that are just sitting here in a pile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ricky, I think you're an Uber collector, so like you would make sure these all remain in the original record, right?
Usually what I do is I use them immediately because I know they have some kind of, I believe they have some kind of expiration date on them.
Well, you're probably more at risk of like the company that's offering the download going out of business or something
that
too.
But yeah, I usually keep them because, you know,
I dump them in this big, like, old lady coupon pouch that I have here. And I don't actually do anything with them because if I go to get these, then I have them downloaded, and then I have to, like, take them and store them and back them up and whatever else. I feel like if I'm accumulating files, then I'm also accumulating the responsibility of backing up the files so I don't lose them, but then I'm not actually listening to the files because it's easy enough for me to pop up iTunes and just go into Apple Music at this point and just, like, play the stream of something, even if I might have the MP3 sitting on my computer. Like, I'm not even checking to see if I have it. I'm just like, maybe it's on that hard drive, whatever, I'll just go into Apple Music and play it. So it's weird, the streaming thing has totally killed the usefulness of files in my life. It's
interesting. Odd.
I'm by no means suggesting this method as a sane or value-driven thing. This is just how my particular neuroses have manifested themselves, given what we have right now.
No, those are totally fair.
Yeah,
fair, totally fair.
So let's talk about injuries here. So the Riverboat Gamblers, garage punk bands. They like to jump around. They like to have a few drinks. They like to do crazy things. And they like to, in particular, Mike Weeb, Weeby? I don't know. I've never actually said his name out loud.
I say Weeby. Weeby.
You want to say Weeby? Mike, lead singer of the Riverboat Gamblers. He is playing in a bar in, do we know what town this is?
I think it was South by Southwest.
Was it, yes, South by? Okay. Yes. All right. See, this where you'd think we'd write a news website. We would, you know, figure out where these things happen. But anyways, he's playing in a bar, and there's video of this, and that's what makes it a little bit, I don't know, better or worse, depending on how squeamish you are for these sort of things. And he gets up on a table, and he's got a drink in his hand and a mic in the other hand, and everyone's got their beer in the air, and they're having a grand old time, and he's you know, he's in his element. He's on stage. He decides that he is going to jump off into the crowd. Not even jump, fall backwards into the crowd as sort of like a crazy punk rock trust exercise, and the crowd, for whatever reason, even though they look like they're having a good time and apparently bore him no ill will, they didn't catch him, so he just landed on the floor. And then, to his credit, Mike gets back up on stage and finishes the set. He looks a little fucked up, but he finishes the set. But after that, he goes to the hospital, so he has a whole bunch of injuries, including broken ribs and a collapsed lung. So he is on the injured list for the foreseeable future. The Riverboat Gamblers' upcoming shows have been canceled until he is fixed and he is on the mend. So that's what happened to Mike of the Riverboat Gamblers. We wish him well. If you were in that bar and you didn't catch him because you didn't want to spill your beer or something, that's a pretty shitty thing.
But is it? Do you have a responsibility to catch a stage diver, or is a stage diver?
I don't have a responsibility to catch some meathead if they're doing something dumb where they're about to kick me in the face. If I'm standing directly in front of the lead singer of the band and they're really clearly on a precipice and about to do something, I would probably be aware that I may be involved in this piece of stagecraft, given where I'm standing.
What if you're holding an $8 beer because you're at South by Southwest, or a $12 beer?
Here's the thing. And I say this as someone who loves his beers. If you're going to buy this overpriced beer, you may want to either do so and drink it before you are in a bustling crowd of people in front of a stage, or, you know, go to the back so no one is gonna either try to jump on you, or, you know, all of a sudden decide that they're gonna have a pit right where you are. There's nothing. I've been in many situations where I've been sitting there, you know, clutching my drink weirdly to hope that no one is going to smash into me. And inevitably someone smashes into me because I'm standing way too close, or I'm standing in the wrong place. And then I get wet, and it is really no one's fault for my own, but bringing a big open thing of liquid to where I was standing. And so I'm I'm gonna say, you know, get out of the way.
So, if Adam, you gotta be. What's your analysis for the cause of this? Is it just that the chance of randomness, in that he got eight people that just weren't catchers, and it was just an unlucky night? Is it because he was at South by Southwest, it was people inexperienced with L Stage Divo? Was it because beers were more expensive, so people were more interested in protecting their beers than protecting someone's health?
I'd love if it was about rationing. That'd be the best. Someone did a value analysis and they were like, well,
this beer cost me $8, but he's probably got insurance. So if you divide that up by the number of people in the bar, it's cheaper.
So one of my very first concert experiences that I can remember involved like the singer of the band kind of getting up on tables, which were really didn't seem like they should be on, and jumping around. And I was just a, you know, little teenage whelp at the time. And I remember it just totally blew my mind that this was happening. Like, it seemed like pandemonium. And so I have a lot of, endearment for that as a, from a nostalgic standpoint. So, you know, I'm giving it a little bit of past that. If anyone's interested, it was the Smugglers. They used to be a Lookout Records band. And they were playing at the Mind Bomb in St. Catharines, which is no longer there, although there was a record store now called Mind Bomb in St. Catharines. But anyways, they were playing the Mind Bomb, and Grant Lawrence, singer of the Smugglers, got up on some tables and was jumping around, and it was fun. Anyways, so, I don't know. The South by Southwest angle is an interesting one on this, because I very much want to get on my high and mighty thing and be like, you know, oh, these are just a bunch of, you know, rich tech hipsters or whatever that are in this bar, whatever. So, but I don't actually know anything about South by Southwest, so I don't want to just make fun of people who, based on some fictional scenario I come up with. So, I don't know. I mean, on the one, this dude is known for getting on stuff and jumping off of stuff. So he's got to know that, you know, one of these days I might get fucked up doing this. So he bears some degree of responsibility, but I don't know, man. Catch a guy. Don't just let him fall on the floor. That's what I say.
There you go, folks. You heard it from Adam White.
Catch people.
If you fall, catch I will people. Catch you time after time.
So, yeah. So, anyways, let's play a Riverboat Gambler song because they're fun. I realize that I have a huge blind spot with this band, where I really was a fan of Something to Crow About, which is a record that they had come out in like 2003, maybe. And I have listened to nothing since then. And they've had two or three LPs that have been out since that time. So I really need to go back and find out what these guys are doing, because they're still at it and I really like them. But this is an old song, because that's all I know. So this is back from their early days. This is a song called Smoke and Crack with L.A. Reid. This is the Riverboat Gamblers. No telling how this might hit you.
Until my time, always find the girl to be wasting your
And we are back. And let's talk about another unfortunate incident in the punk rock scene. The lead singer of Rotting Out, Walter Delgado, has been arrested for allegedly transporting marijuana. The police allegedly searched, well, he was pulled over while driving because the police said he was following too close to a car in front of him. And so they pulled him over, they brought out the drug sniffing dogs, and allegedly they found 70 pounds of weed and 1,000 hash oil jars. The approximate street value of all that is $350,000, one third of a million bazingas. And he was also with Anthony Jockum of Search Block. They were both arrested and charged with second degree felonies, which include possession and trafficking in marijuana and possession of criminal tools. And don't quote me on this, but I think Walter Delgado is a straight edge guy or claims to be straight edge. I read that, but I can't confirm that myself. That's just something I read. And so I got to thinking, is A, it's so dumb to smuggle marijuana because it's free in a lot of states. Not free, it's legal in a lot of states. But then I thought, maybe it is smart to smuggle marijuana because it is legal in a lot of states. So you can buy it and you can have a huge markup just for driving it. And that's all you got to do. I mean, it's probably the highest markup from legal to illegal or from state to state just based on pure driving markup, which I thought. However, they got pulled over for driving too close, although I don't think they actually got pulled over for driving too close, if you know what I'm saying. Ricky Frankel, do you know what I'm saying? Is Ricky there, Adam White, or did he cut out?
I don't hear Ricky.
Ricky, are you there?
The cops got him.
He's driving too close.
Oh, shit, Ricky. This is... So, Rotting Out is not a going concern anymore. Were they a band that you were too aware of? They were a little bit off my radar.
They were a very well respected LA hardcore band, and I would say they were representative very much of this Southern LA hardcore, kind of like even though they're from Sacramento, a lot like Trash Talk, you know, kind of very rambunctious hardcore, but not chugga chugga, kind of more berserk, but clearly influenced by NYHC. You know, wild guys is how I would put it. You know,
yeah. I mean, so like on the one hand, we're clearly in this transition period where I think like the world is collectively waking up that like marijuana is like the least of the problems that we have, and you know once basically all the old farts are dead and young people are making the laws, it's just going to end up being just a legal controlled substance everywhere, you know, like alcohol or tobacco or whatever else. You know, hell, it's moving fast enough that you guys are further ahead than we are in a lot of this, and Canada's usually on top
Adam
of this
White
stuff.
With the German compliment, so, even though he's Canadian. Well, it's his birthday, so let him fly.
All right, thank you. We're getting there. Our boy Trudeau is gonna make it happen.
People
but,
love that guy Trudeau, don't they? They love that guy.
He's a beautiful
I
man.
Wish we
John.
Had him instead of a Trump man. Anyways,
Ricky. Are you back?
Hello.
Hey, we thought the cops got you.
For some reason, I keep hearing you guys go in and out, and I don't know why. Even though I'm connected to it with an Ethernet, but we're on. But yeah, I mean, just before I cut out again, I happen to agree. I think with John, I think maybe people were trying to just do. I think maybe they're trying to sell it just on the street and avoid the taxes because they are pretty high for just buying something. So,
So here's where I'm looking at this. So on the one hand, I want to look at this and say like, hey, you know what? Why are we persecuting people for pot at this point? On the other hand, pot aside, they're moving a fairly sizable amount of a substance that you're not supposed to move.
It's a lot of weed, man.
So there's one thing about like, you know, you grew some plants or you had like, you know, a few joints on you or something like that. There's another thing if you've got 70 pounds of marijuana and 1,000 jars of hash oil. Like that's trafficking, right? Like that is an operation that you're doing. And let's say we're not even talking about drugs here. Let's say you're doing something else that you're not supposed to necessarily move across state lines.
Guns.
I don't know. I don't really know how guns. No, I mean, not even that. You know what? Someone got some people were arrested. Hold on. You'll like this. In Niagara Falls, Ontario, there was a cop that was arrested not too long ago for smuggling cheese over the border from the States and selling it to local pizza joints in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
Can't be that Wisconsin cheese.
Because, no, not even. It's just that, that Wisconsin, this is like upstate New York cheese. So if you go over to, like, you know, we do this all the time. We'll go over the border and we'll do
cheese shopping. You
know, we'll do this common, cheese shopping. Basically, we do this very common run, or at least we did when the Canadian dollar was better, where we would go over the border because I live right in the border. You would get gas in the car, you'd buy a case of beer, and you get some milk, and then you would come back. And you would go over and do your like gas, beer, and milk run because all of those things are cheaper in the States than they were in Canada at the time. So this dude went and smuggled a whole bunch of cheese over the border because it was way cheaper to buy, you know, mozzarella in the States than it was in Canada, and sold it to pizza places here. And then he got arrested. And no one went and made the argument when he was arrested, but cheese is legal. Like, what you did there was that there was some law about moving that amount of stuff, and you broke the law. So
it probably breaks some trade deals, if anything. Probably nothing like...
Right. So, I mean, I would be inclined to maybe look at this story and say, you know, like, rah-rah marijuana legalization aside, you did have, you know, basically a trafficking operation here where there was a whole bunch of shit involved. This wasn't just flipping.
What if he's in some shit now?
Oh, I guarantee if he's moving it, he's not the head of it. The guys, I mean, this doesn't make sense. Why would the head guy of a cartel move his own stuff? He pays people to do that.
Well, good question. But
they didn't sneak these into his bag at the airport. If you get into a vehicle and there is 1,000 of anything and you start moving it and someone pays you, then you are somewhat complicit in that.
For sure. I mean, do you think he'll, I mean, if it's marijuana, do you think they'll probably go easier on him? It's not like it's crack or anything.
Not necessarily, because some DAs have agendas and like maybe he'll get the anti-marijuana DA and the DA will, I mean, this is all allegedly, and we don't know, but I mean, if a person was found with this much weed in their van, the DA is going to see that as a badge and try to smash them as hard as he can so he gets like the little token or the trophy, you know? I mean, that's a lot of weed, man. That's a lot of weed.
Do we know where he actually got arrested? If it was like a border outside state or like Mexico, or do we know?
Outside Cleveland.
Oh, outside Cleveland? Oh, well.
Yeah.
I don't know what the marijuana laws are in Ohio. I think it's...
But listen, do you guys think it is... If you're going to do an illegal drug activity, is it smart to buy marijuana because it's legal and then transport it? Or should you just do something illegal the whole way? I think it's smart to do the markup, the illegal markup to an illegal area.
I don't know. Like I would imagine that like even in the places where it's legalized right now, it's still somewhat controlled. Like you couldn't just...
You can't just buy...
You can't just acquire a mass quantity of it and then vanish without, you know, paperwork needing to go somewhere about that. So I imagine it's one of those kind of cases. The other
thing is, man, if you're I'm not giving anybody advice, but if you're doing suspicious things, you should not be driving an unmarked van. That's always... you know what I mean? So, but also, the point is this is... I've spoken about my opinion of the police before. I want to like them, but I have trouble. Do you guys really think the police pulled them over for following too closely to somebody else? Or do you think they saw a white van from out of state and said, let's see what these boys are up to? Oh, and we also happen to have the police dogs with us. You know what I'm saying?
So if I
was his attorney, that's the card I would play. That's
why
for sure.
Would, I mean, driving too close, they just got pulled over for literally just driving too close to someone. Is that really like a pull, like can someone be pulled over for that?
That is a thing you can be pulled over for, but let me put it, I've been pulled over 14 times, I've been pulled over 13 times in my car, once on my bicycle, and 13 times that I've been pulled over on my car, what I was pulled over for?
What?
Swerving. And you know what they always say to me, 13 out of 13 times, when they walk up to the car, you know what they say to me?
What?
How much have you been drinking?
You're John Gentile.
You're John Gentile.
Can you sign this? No,
they say, how much of you had to drink? You were swerving. And then I say zero. And then they say, would you be willing to take a breath test? I'm like, yes, I would be, because I haven't had anything to drink. And then they harass you, and then they eventually go away. Or they try to intimidate you and provoke you into a fight. But we've talked about that. Maybe we'll talk about that again, but later on. But I've never got, knock on wood, I've never gotten a ticket out of 13 out of 13 times, and it's always been for, quote, swerving. So, and it's always between midnight to 2 a.m., you know what I mean? Anyways, let's talk about something happier. Music festival season is here. Music festival season is here. Don Giovanni Records has announced a fairly unique festival. It is called the New Alternative Music Festival, and it is advertised as being completely independent. No corporate sponsors, all independent sponsors. If there are sponsors, no large corporate people with their hands in it. Bands playing include Punk News favorite Downtown Boys, Punk News favorite Screaming Females, P.S. Elliott, which I think is a semi-reunion because I don't think they played together in a long time. Big Guys, Warriors, Mikey Erg, Tenement, and many, many, many more bands. So, Adam, is this your jam? What do you think of the truly independent music festival? Can there be a truly independent music festival, or is the concept independent just really a look at the scale of people involved? I mean, because from a certain perspective, you know, Universal Records is independent. They're independent as to them, you know.
It's funny because I was reading the announcement that Don Giovanni's put up about this thing, and I, on the one hand, like I'm all for this. You know, God, like it is my dream to one day run a little music festival like this, like
punk. Oh man, guys, I'm telling you, like,
no, a corporate free, no punk news. The idea of you know, running a little fest like this, just, you know, it that seems like a cool way to, you know, if you're in the position to bring bands like this together, is to, you know, to really like to give back, to help build your scene, to help foster new bands. Like, that's cool. So I'm all about what Don Giovanni's doing with this. I thought that the politics expressed in the announcement, I don't know, felt a little bit obvious to me. Like I was surprised. Maybe I'm just not on the festival circuit enough that this has struck me as a problem. But I didn't realize that there was such a strong kind of like corporatist festival thing that you specifically needed to make one that was anti that. I'm not saying that I didn't realize that there was corporately sponsored music festivals, because of course there is. I just figured that there was enough little, you know, local strange music festivals full of punk bands that happen that, you know, no one in the corporate world gives a shit about, that you don't actually need to go make one that is so expressly, you know, in its very mission statement, existing as an anti to the corporate thing. I didn't realize that that was needed, but hey,
I think
if it is, then
yeah, I think in this age of festivals, and it should probably made a little more clear, because I think, you know, you go to Coachella, even Warped Tour, or I believe FYF Fest too, you're going to see those sponsored. So I think that's just one extra little tidbit that they wanted to add to get people to go. And what I'm finding with these, this is the first one, so people are going to be able to go to this on the ground floor. And what I've been noticing is just they'll start out, like festivals like this will start out, you know, with all of these rules that they want to have, that one, and that they think are more, they want to keep their morals going. If they're successful, they keep growing and growing and growing until they're like, you know, FYF Fest was just at the Echoplex only 6 years ago. And now they're next to the USC Coliseum, and so I think these festivals have a tendency to peak after like 10 years. I think we've seen the peak of Coachella long ago, but
yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right on that one. I mean, that happened locally here. Like we had one at St. Catharines that used to go on called Scene every year, and Punk News had sponsored it a couple of years. And, you know, Scene used to be strictly, strictly one of these little bar hopping things where you would go from, you know, from venue to venue to venue, and there'd be handfuls of bands that are playing each of them. And it was mostly local bands that were there. And then kind of by the time they got to the end of it, a big promotion company out of Toronto had stepped in, and, you know, all of a sudden their booking budget went from like, you know, from $20,000 to $200,000. And while they still had some bands playing in bars, there was also, you know, a giant stage set up in a park and, you know, barriers and, you know, big, you know, big name pop bands and things like that that had never played the small versions. And then after that, it fizzled out because it became sort of an unwieldy thing to run, and not necessarily all of the I want to say, not like, you know, not all of the people that were like super passionate about it when it was a small little thing showed back up. So
yeah, and
you know, are jaded. You guys are so jaded. This is a cool festival. This will be fun. No, you guys suck.
I think this will be cool. I'm just curious, like. I'm curious how much of a problem this kind of like corporate festival thing really is. Like, could John Giovanni not have just said that, like, hey, we're doing this awesome indie fest thing and just had that stand on its own as like, look at the bands that are involved. Their argument
is that most indie fests aren't really indie. And they just use that as a marketing thing or a aesthetic thing.
Well, and you know, when these small festivals seem to, except there are exceptions too. I think Fest is pretty good about this. When an independent fest like this starts out, and I'm not saying this is going to happen to Don Giovanni, but I've noticed this happening. For example, FYFS posted their lineup for this year's fest. I think either today or yesterday, and there's not one punk band on it. Okay, and instead you have
FYFS.
FYFS, LCC. It's like LCD Sound System and Kendrick Lamar or something like that are headlining it. There's not one real punk band on there. Now compare that to 6 years ago where they, or no, not 6 years ago, let's see, where did they not, okay, so 2008 was the last year they did it at the Echo and the Echoplex and a couple other places. They had negative Approach, Fucked Up, Off With Their Heads. I'm looking for others.
Well, there's a couple punk bands, but you're right, there's not that many. There's Sheer Mag, Head Wound City, but not a whole lot. I mean, you're right. And, Dive, yeah. Ty Segall, I guess. Shellac's playing.
And I'm just looking more at 2008. So Dimitri Coates.
Dimitri Coates did a solo performance?
I guess he did. In 2008, he did. And so I think what happens is, like, these you know, punk festivals that are supposed to be, you know, punk, they start to they gain this corporate sponsorship. They're able to get more a wider selection of bands from different genres, and then they become what FYF Fest is now. And I don't think this is going to happen. They seem to be with John Giovanni, they seem to just want to have a small thing right now. But I mean, who knows what could happen? Who knows what could happen in 10 years from now on this? That's what I'm saying. And I think
this will be cool.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Don Giovanni's been Don Giovanni for about 10 years now. They put out cool records. They got cool bands. You guys are being jaded. You guys are too old for punk. You guys are too old for the scene.
No, I'm all for this. Yeah. Don't take it away.
You're like, oh, it's going to suck in 10 years. This is cool.
It's just that I don't know if the aesthetics that they want to do will be there, want to keep, will be there in 10 years.
Listen, Grandpa, go take your Geritol.
Everyone, you know, this is horse shit. Everyone keeps saying, Ricky, you're 12 years old. Ricky, you're a fucking grandpa now. Make up your mind, guys. Come on.
Oh, all right, Grandpa.
Oh, Ricky called you. This is 12-year-old
Grandpa. This is bullshit. Oh, okay.
That's a funny name for a song, though.
All right, Grandpa. All right, let's move on here. Tell us about This Is Hardcore.
Yeah, Gramps.
Another festival that I would probably go to also. Organizers have announced the lineup and details for the 2016 incarnation of This Is Hardcore. Bands scheduled to perform include Turning Point, Youth of Today, Integrity, Gorilla Biscuits, Code Orange, Iron Reagan, Terror, Nails, and more. The festival takes place August 4th through 7th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and tickets go on sale April 1st, 2016, which is Friday. For complete details and information, there's a link and all that junk. Solid lineup. If I wasn't on the West Coast, I'd probably try and make the trek out to see some of these bands.
Yeah, I'm just worried about how they're going to be in 10 years. Like, will they still be This Is Hardcore in 10 years? No, listen. This is a solid lineup. I'm excited to see Integrity. It's probably going to be their only U.S. show and maybe their only show for 2016. I saw Integrity in 2015. They were awesome. I think it's going to be a different lineup. I went to This Is Hardcore last year. great fest. Cro-Mags were amazing.
Didn't the Misfits play that year?
Yeah, and honestly, like I hate turning my back on the Misfits, but that's kind of the point where I really did turn my back on the Misfits. It was Jerry only, Jerry Jr. and Eric Archie.
Yeah,
and I don't know what it was, man. They played like all the songs. And they played them super fast. I just did not enjoy it as much as I did 10 years ago when I saw Jerry only, Marky and Dez, or Jerry only, Dez and Robo. I just didn't enjoy it. I don't know if I become more jaded or if the band is just not as exciting anymore. I don't know. The point being is usually this is Hardcore Fest has kind of a left field pick like the Misfits. I think it was the year or two before that they had Guar and Sleep and maybe even Tragedy. And so this one is basically strictly hardcore. Youth of Today, Integrity, Burn, Nails, Terror, all very, very hardcore band. Not bands that are very, very hardcore. All bands that are hardcore bands and firmly within that genre. I'm excited. I'm definitely going to go see Integrity. I'll probably check out a couple of the other bands, but the Integrity show really should be special, and I hope they're the top headliner, at least for one of the days. I'm excited. Adam White, is this too macho brohead for you, or are you into this kind of stuff?
Oh, this scares me, John. I couldn't do this. I'd be interested in seeing a few of the veteran bands that are on this bill. I don't know if this is the kind of fest that I would normally gravitate to, only because it's way too much stuff on that end of the spectrum, and I don't hang out on that end of the spectrum all that frequently, so I feel that I would get scared and have to go hide under a table.
This fest is surprisingly huge in Philadelphia. Like, if every year Philadelphia has like I forget the Roots Picnic, which is a huge festival, this is almost as big as that. It is a gigantic festival in Philadelphia. Like, in Philadelphia, for a brief time, hardcore people take over the city, at least in a section, because there's a bunch of after shows too. So, you know, Philadelphia isn't necessarily thought of as a hardcore town, but I guess at least in August it is. So I went to this last year. A lot of cool records for sale. So I recommend it. I'll be going. Listen, let's wrap up tonight's podcast. I've got a song. And let's see. Today, well, by the time the people hear this, it will be, let's see here. It will be April 2nd. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm sorry. April 3rd. Oh, you guys want to talk about one more article? Adam White?
No.
So keep going. It'll be April 3rd by the time you hear this. So 2 days prior to this, I got a little bit of a link. Is a very rare Clash song has been released, and I'm going to play it for you right now. I'm sure you all know the Clash song Stay Free off Give Them Enough Rope, but little did we know that between the first Clash album and the recording of Give Them Enough Rope, the Clash recorded a single that was abandoned and never released it. Studio recording, very, very good sounding, studio quality, not a demo. It's called Stay Alive, and it's basically Stay Free, but with Joe Strummer handling most of the vocals and Mick Jones doing backups, as opposed to Mick Jones singing and Joe Strummer doing the backups. So this is Stay Alive by The Clash, and I hope you enjoyed it. It's the first time this has been released to the public. Check it out.
Yeah.
Cool. You don't normally get to hear that. John, tell us again, like, where did you get this? I got that,
well, there's the Joe Strummer Foundation, and they've got a, one of their main guys there is a guy called BG, you know, BG, over at the Joe Strummer Foundation. Well, he sent me an email, and he said he's going to release it, so he gave us the leg up, so that's cool.
That's very cool.
Oh, very cool. Well, hey, you don't normally get to hear new Clash songs, so there you go. So I think that does it for us here in the Punk Biz Podcast this week. Thanks to BG over at the Joe Strummer Foundation for sharing that with us. Thanks to the Riverboat Gamblers and Morning Glory for letting us play those songs. Thanks to our producer, Greg Simpson, for having to listen to us week on week, because I'm sure that's not particularly fun. If anyone wants to email us, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. We're on Twitter as what, Adam White, what
John, this, John Gentile. But I am not John Gentile on Discus, who is a woman hater guy. I'm John Gentile at Punk News and John Gentile on Twitter, but John Gentile at Discus is a pretty wretched guy.
And Pornhub. on Pornhub, you're Porno Dave, right? All right.
I'm at DesertBurst92 on Twitter and Instagram if you just want to look at records.
All right, Grandpa. You and your records, Grandpa. We listen to MP3s now.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
I hate you guys.